Welcome to the Michael U Podcast. I have a very special guest today. Yes. It's Robin Barden from Oakwood. Robin, how are you?
I'm doing very well. It's a beautiful day.
Yeah.
I haven't complained too much. I'm sitting enjoying a casual pod with my good friend Michael along with a few drinks.
Yeah, actually it's really fun. Robin and I were supposed to do a happy hour, so we thought we'd invite you guys into our happy hour. I'm third drink in, you're second drink in.
I've been a little slow because I didn't eat all day, and I thought maybe I should get a little congee down before get too deep into it.
Yeah, we're at the fabulous podcast studio at my house, where there's a Doc Octopus on the wall, magic cards everywhere.
One of which is massive.
Yeah. And this is the first pod that we're doing in my house, and Rob just tried some congee. How'd you like the congee, Rob?
It's delicious.
Yeah.
Your future wife is a fantastic cook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and I give an update. So, I just got engaged. Pretty huge. Rob was just telling me.
I let the cat out of the bag there.
That's okay.
Whoops.
Yeah. Rob was just giving me some input on marriage and life and stuff like that. And like, we were talking in my backyard about, you know, how people, like, set up these crazy engagements and, maybe you can share again your story of how you and get you
Rob. Well, I knew that I wanted to marry my now current wife. And I went out and I bought a ring. And I've never been one that super subscribes to all the very traditional values that come from our Christian-backed society.
right.
But, you know, I thought that it was a nice thing and it would be a lot of fun, and I was with the person I wanted to spend the rest of my life with. So anyways, went out and bought this ring, and I like stuck it in a safe.
Okay.
Kept it there and was like, when am I gonna do this? I don't really know. And all these people online and all of our millions of influences these days show all these incredibly crazy things and that they planned out. I don't know, felt like there was a lot of pressure to make it something insane. So I spent so much time thinking about it and wondering when I should do it or whatever, and I was like, maybe I'll do it like when we go to Hawaii. And then ended up just kind of like doing it in bed one night when we'd gotten home from, actually I think we'd gotten home from being at an Oktoberfest event.
Oh yeah. And was she still wearing her, like,
she was not that, in a drindle.
Yeah, were you in your is it lederhosen?
I was out of my lederhosen at this point, not to give too much information, but it ended up being a not down on one knee. We were just both sitting in bed, and probably had a few beers, and that's where it happened.
You know, where's the best place? It is October. Where's the best place to do Oktoberfest? Where do you do that?
That's a good question.
We should go to Oktoberfest.
You know what? I was actually thinking about it, and I was like, man, I would really like to do that, and hadn't really just even thought about it this year. Last year I had a lot of stuff going on in my life. Usually that's like a fun thing to do around my birthday and your birthday.
Yeah, I know.
But I guess, like, we used to go to Harvest House, which is down at like the Queenie rooftop area where the Christmas market and stuff is.
Yeah,
but they don't do it there now. I can't remember. I think they do it on the P&E grounds now or something.
Oh really? Is it like a specific day? I thought Oktoberfest was like a month long.
Some of the Oktoberfest things have like specific nights where they do it, but honestly I'm not really sure. I haven't looked into it in a couple of years.
Yeah, you know,
it is fun though.
I've never done an Oktoberfest, but I've never been one of those cool guys that gets invited to Oktoberfest.
I don't know that you need to really be a cool
guy. Really?
It's just like a fun thing. It's just like a night out. You get a few friends together and you're just like, we're gonna go there and have some beers, and usually there's like ridiculous stuff going on.
Yeah,
some weird events that you can watch,
and yeah,
various places serving beer. You can wander around and they usually sell you like tokens that they call something weird that suits the theme of the event. I don't know, it's just like a fun night out.
Yeah,
like a sort of more adult night out. It's not like going out and dancing the night away with a bunch of 20-year-olds at a bar. Instead,
exactly.
It's like real life grown-ups there.
Robin's done a lot of traveling, and I traveled this year to Europe. I told you, right? I went to Scotland, and have you been to Scotland?
Never been to Scotland.
Yeah.
I've never been to the UK at all, actually.
Oh, really?
The airport. I think I've been to, like, transferred over in London or something.
Where have you been in Europe?
First Europe trip, oddly enough, was Turkey. Had planned to go to Abu Dhabi, where my wife's best friend lives.
Yeah.
And you have to stop over to get there, so we were thinking of, like, what would be a cool city. to spend like 3 nights in or something right. on our way there, because we figured if we're stopping over and it's a big long trip, breaking it up might be nice. So we started looking at different cool cities in Europe, and we looked I'm losing my head here. Istanbul.
Okay.
Yeah, I can do this. we looked at Istanbul and we thought, oh, this looks like such a great place. And then we started looking a little bit more at Turkey, and we decided to just scrap the trip to see your best friend and go to Turkey instead.
Oh, yeah?
So, and that actually...
What was it, like, what's it like there? I don't, like...
It isn't really. It doesn't have that sort of feel.
Is it like a super modern city, or is it kind of like...
It's kind of a mix of both. Istanbul spans two continents. It's in Asia and and it is huge, and it has amazing like historical sections, amazing old architecture, and not just like really, you know, like Roman style architecture, which there is a lot of in Turkey, but also just like cool stuff from even the last 300 or 400 years.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, it was fascinating. We ended up road tripping around all of Turkey.
Oh, cool.
We drove about 1600 kilometers in a Nissan Micra. The best part of that actually was returning the car.
Yeah,
I mean, there's a generalization, of course, but men in Turkey tend to be sort of a machismo sort of style.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
and when I returned it, like the guy that took the keys back at the car rental agency, like, looked at me and he was like, "Is this your car?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he's like, "It's a lady's car." And I was like, okay, well, I mean, I just drove it all across the whole country. Right. He's like, no, but it's the lady's car. Did your wife rent it? I was like, are you fucking serious?
Getting insulted by the car rental guy. Like, yeah.
But he just, and I was like, okay, yeah, I'm sure it is a lady's car. Appreciate it. Here's the keys. Man.
Right.
Get out of here.
It's so funny. Like having some of these interactions when you're traveling, you know, they create such good memories.
Though, oh, totally. Right?
Like, yeah. This summer, Robin and I were kind of ships in the night. He was traveling through, like, we sound like a couple of rich guys. Our travels through Europe. Rob's from Salt Spring Island. And
that is where I grew up.
Yeah, I'm from like Marple in Vancouver. But I guess you were traveling through Europe too, right? So we were both traveling through Barcelona, and we just missed each other. So we were trying to connect for a dinner or something like that, but it didn't happen.
It was very sad.
I was like super late. We're
like an hour apart.
Yeah.
But it was like, I'd already left Barcelona, right. And we like had places to stay, and we'd like booked a reservation for dinner. And then Mike's like, hey, I'm in Barcelona. I was like, I wish I knew like a day ago.
Because like for me, I like, are you the type of traveler that has crazy itinerary? We're going here from 7:45 to like, you know, 9:22.
So as a single man, I had zero itinerary.
Right.
Like I flew to Southeast Asia and like arrived at 9 p.m. and like asked a taxi to take me to the beach. And I just walked along the beach until I saw a place that looked, well, honestly, cheap enough for me to afford. And I just walked in and was like, hey, can I stay here? And then I just, you know, when I felt like going to the next place, I did. And I, traveling with my brother once, we just walked into the airport in one place because we were kind of done there. And we're like, where's your next flight leave to? And I know that sounds like kind of cliche and ridiculous, but we legitimately said that. And they were like, there's one that leaves to Ho Chi Minh City in 20 minutes. And we were like, they're like, if you run out to the, like literally run out onto the tarmac, cause it was like a self-load small plane, you can catch it. So we paid for our tickets and we went. But now as a married person and a person with a child, definitely itinerize a little bit more. Yeah. I mean, we don't like book our restaurants in advance and stuff like that, but we generally know which cities and towns we're going to go to when we book our accommodation and things in advance. How about you?
Huh? I like to keep it loose and fancy free because and that's very masculine. I'm sure the car guy.
I'm picturing you prancing right now.
The car guy from Istanbul would be like
fancy free, are you in your lady's car?
So yeah, I like to keep it like super, like, so like, okay, let's say we go to Barcelona, we're going to two monuments. and then everything else is open. Because I like to, I kind of like, you know, it's hard to do that when you go to major cities and stuff like that, but like, you know, do as the locals do, like when you're in Rome, do as the Romans do. So it's kind of, there's, you know, that's kind of the type of travel I like, and Pri is kind of the same way, which is really, really nice. So we, you know, we were in, we went to Scotland, we went to Spain, and we also went to Italy for a wedding, and like...
Oh, you went to a wedding in Italy?
Yeah, went to a wedding for...
I feel like maybe you told me that, but I forgot.
Yeah, so it's actually one of Pri's, like, really, really good friends that was getting married in Italy, and it was just, like, they were on vineyards, it was just, like, it was, like, super picturesque, it was, yeah.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah.
I really love Italy. That is another place I've
been. Yeah?
We went Turkey first, then Portugal, then Italy, then Paris, then Spain.
Oh, you did them. You were...
These are like all in separate years. Except okay. Paris we went in spring, and Italy we went in summer that year.
I think. Oh, wow. Okay. Rob loves traveling, you know. I used to prod him for his travels because I was like working all the time.
I used to bug Michael and say, when are you going to take a day off and see some of the world?
Exactly.
But he's starting to do it now. I'm very proud of him.
Yeah, I know. It took a long time. It only took 6 years. Yeah.
I feel like maybe it's got something to do with the influence of Priya.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, you know, I think, you know, we talked, like, the last pod I did was, I talked about, like, my morning routine and stuff like that. I'm, like, the most routine person.
And then I floss 31 times.
Yeah, I'm on my 11th stroke.
Click, click, click goes the floss against my teeth.
Yeah. So basically we went through there, but Scotland was just like insane. It was just like incredible. Yeah. If you haven't gone, Rob, you should go. Didn't take that?
No, it's not that. I'll just
quickly reply to this text. I'll talk to you about my Scotland trip while Robin is texting.
Sorry, you're going to do it? Where? What? I'm not listening.
That's right. So I have this trip in Scotland, and, you know, something that I noticed, and this is a good thing that Robin's texting away on his phone like a 14-year-old. I'm just joking.
Oh, Snapchat.
Exactly. He was on TikTok.
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah.
It's like the new thing.
The new
that
thing.
It's going to replace Instagram. I don't believe it.
I don't know. Like,
It'll only replace Instagram if Facebook buys it.
Yeah. So I went to Scotland, and I don't mind if you want to take those texts and stuff. But I went to Scotland, and one of the things that I did was I took a technology break. So I went like,
ooh.
Yeah, so besides camera, you know, I went like totally, tried to go totally dark.
Did
you know?
Put it on airplane mode?
I was always on airplane mode, and it was, everything was just like, it was just
beautiful. What if you dropped it in the water? Then your pictures wouldn't be in the cloud.
Well, you know what, it's funny, because Kelsey taught me about this thing. There's this thing called Google Photo. And so it automatically syncs, so they have all your data, all your photos, all your face recognition. I'm just going right into the matrix.
You're so adorable. Kelsey taught me about this thing. She's a young person.
She is under 25, and so she basically set me up with it so that my photos would get automatically downloaded and blah blah blah. So anyways, she went to Scotland, and the people there were just like the friendliest people you've ever met. Like, I would go to these, I loved going to these like super Scottish pubs, like, you know, like
I'd totally be down for that.
Like, it was so fun. You go on, like, you actually go underground. Like, they were like, it felt like it was like Prohibition era. You go underground, no windows. It's like, it's not like Vancouver. It's like a bar. It's a small, like, hole. Like, it's literally like, it'll be a room of this size. It'll be a bar and nothing else. And then like a bunch of old Scottish guys just sitting around the bar, and it was just like, and then
sounds cool.
Oh man, it was awesome. We went to northern Scotland, and we went to see like some cool like kind of naturey stuff, but one of the bars was really cool because you just get connect with people and they want to hear your story. And I heard there's like this guy I met, his name was Donald. He owned the bar that we were hanging out in the middle of the day, and he told stories of the Navy and how they used to give out like whiskey stipends and stuff like that.
Whiskey stipends.
Yeah, and like every day you walk into, like, you go to the shipyard to like take your shift, and then he's like, that's where they said like three fingers come from.
Yeah, you measure.
So you like actually fingers. Like you actually do this. So I'm showing like on a glass like three fingers, and they just pour whiskey to the top of it.
So you wanted fat fingers.
Then. Yeah, you want exactly.
Now, really hard to type on your phone if you have them, but then it was worth like an extra half ounce of whiskey.
Exactly. And then they're just like, they're, that's where it comes from. Like two fingers, three fingers. It's just like, they just do it at the side of the glass. And I was like, that is so cool. And then I drank like scotch with like a real Scotchman, a Scotsman. So I was just, it was so like, yeah, it was just like a great time that we had. And it was like, you know, it's like, it is memories to last a lifetime for sure. I actually really devalued traveling, but I feel like this is something that I don't think I'll do, like, as much as you. How often do you go away?
If you need to take it, I don't know, like, talking to the probably 8 to 10 weeks a year.
8 to 10 weeks a year. That is insane. That's 2.5 months, dude.
Well, probably 8 weeks, yeah. I mean, it depends what you count as traveling. Like, right. If I count, like, out of the country only, then it's definitely less than that. But, I mean, I usually take 3 weeks off over Christmas, give or take, and then a couple weeks in the summer, sometimes a couple weeks in the spring. So that's 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah, so we're there. And then lots of long weekends and stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. That's one of your passions.
Yeah, that's one of your passions.
I work hard because I love to travel.
Yeah, when Robin's here, he works really hard. And speaking of work, I haven't really introduced you to Robin yet, and I'm sure it's always embarrassing to... Actually, Robin is maybe one of the guys that kid boasts about himself. Why don't you boast about yourself? So Robin has been a realtor since 2008, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Robin's been a realtor since 2008. He started in Victoria, and he's... you know, he came to Vancouver with a... Why don't you share your... Yeah.
I guess... So I started in 2008, which was right before the subprime crisis down south.
Perfect timing.
And a lot of tumultuousness in all real estate markets of North America, I think. And I went in pretty hard and fast. No holds barred. I had a pretty great first 6 months. But had absolutely no clue what I was doing. I mean, I was representing my clients well, considering my level of experience, but I just didn't know how to run a business. I didn't even know that being a realtor was running a business. I treated it like a job, which it isn't really. And so I had a great first 6 months, and then the market just ground to a halt. I was like, I've got no clients. I haven't done any prospecting. Let's move to the market.
Sure.
my brother and I, who were partners at the time, we'd gotten licensed within a few months of each other, decided to just go away. We had actually booked a trip to Vegas for Halloween that time. And we... yes, please. We went to Vegas and then canceled our tickets back and flew from Vegas to Southeast Asia and spent 3 months there. and then when we came back, the market was hurting in Victoria, and we were working 10 times harder to do a tenth the deals.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, I knew that I wanted to eventually make Vancouver my home. So I thought, if I'm going to be struggling here, I might as well be struggling in the city I want to live in. So I moved over early in 2010 to Vancouver.
What'd you have with you?
And I had my 1990 something Toyota Camry in the beautiful champagne color that I have, with the squeaky passenger door, which is a good story for another day. And with all of my worldly belongings packed into the trunk in the back seat. And I had a good chunk of credit card debt. I had no money in my account. And also a student loan that I was servicing. And I was like, I'm going to become a realtor in Vancouver, where, yes, I did go to university and live for 6 years or so, but don't really have any real circle of influence.
Mm-hmm.
Few friends and things like that that had moved there, and people that I knew from university. But, you know, I didn't grow up there. I didn't have the benefit of having lots of network. Friends, parents, or friends that had bought or sold or had potential to do real estate business. So it was a big leap, and it was a tough one. I went through some pretty hard times getting building my business up, but I didn't want to let it beat me. So I did. I started at McDonald Realty for 3 years.
This is in 2010. Sorry, in 2010.
Yeah.
Yeah.
2010. So, and then 2013 is when I met this fine gentleman that I'm sitting with now.
Cheers.
and I was running a decent business at that point.
What was your volume? Like, so let's go through, like,
averaging 12 deals a year.
Yeah, Rob and I are numbers guys, so.
So I was averaging 12 deals a year, and I was not really in a growth pattern. I was in a holding pattern. I had been sort of growing at a pretty slow rate, and then I'd had 1 year where I'd fallen behind the last. And I wasn't particularly happy where I was working anymore. There's a lot of sort of dissension amongst the ranks there. We were kind of ignored by our company, without speaking ill of our neighboring companies, but it just wasn't working for me at that point. And that's when I was invited to sit down with Mike, which was, in retrospect, a huge mistake.
Exactly. Worst decision ever.
I sat down with Mike and I recognized a person with a really great vision, and at the same time found a really great mentor.
Getting teary.
And Mike told me how shitty my business was and how he was surprised I did as well as I did, flying by the seat of my pants so badly, but at the same time said that he recognized that I had skill in this business that most people don't, and that if I applied it correctly and ran my business like a business, which is something I just didn't really even understand. I didn't get that when you invest in yourself as a realtor, you're investing in a business. It's like running a corner store. If you don't keep the shelves stocked, you don't have anything to sell.
Mm-hmm.
And in real estate, if you don't continue to look at the things, analyze your business, look at the things that work and invest in those things, then you're not going to grow. You're not going to go anywhere. Anyway, so I guess I took my business from, I think the first year that I joined, at the time, Opus Realty, went from 12 to, somewhere around 20. I think actually the year I left at McDonald, I did about 15 deals.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to just over 20, and then I think in the 30s, and then in the 30s, and then the 40s, and then back down to the 30s. although my deals have grown significantly in size because of the market, and also because I just am tending to deal with
You're dealing with a lot of, on average, you're selling properties over $1 million now, right?
Yeah, a lot of the properties I'm dealing with now are in this sort of 1 to 1.5 range, and then outliers above that, and also, of course, still lots of first time homebuyers out there picking up the slightly lower product. But I do a lot of my business in Vancouver, and the price point that I deal with, and primarily is sort of that over one range.
Yeah. So it takes quite a bit of like guts and cojones to like pack up from Victoria, not knowing very many people, entering into a new market as a real estate agent. What would be some of the tips you'd have for people that are in a similar kind of situation when they first get started?
I think a business plan. That was something I completely lacked. And as I said, until we talked about that first time, I didn't even realize that was something that you do.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that a business plan and constant reanalysis of your own business is important.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of newer people, newer agents are like, hey, I've only done 5 deals. It's hard to analyze. You can analyze any number of deals you've done or any amount of business that you've done.
Right.
And that analysis will become less anecdotal and more statistically significant the more deals you do. But you'll find out the things that work for you. I think that you don't have to reinvent the wheel in real estate. I mean, if you do, great. If you have a great mm-hmm. idea, try it. But there are so many things that work so well in real estate that you should start by trying those. And along the way, you're probably going to come up with some great ideas of your own. But try mm-hmm. stuff. If you hate doing it, if you're making an excuse not to do it every time that you've got it scheduled in your calendar to do,
right?
Don't do it. Find something else.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a social person. I built a huge percentage of my early business by just doing open houses and meeting mm-hmm. people.
Yeah, that was all your, like, basically every single...
Well, my first year in real estate in Victoria, I pitched to another agent who was having a tough time selling a small development. It was a heritage conversion into 3 strata units.
Mm-hmm.
I pitched co-listing it with me and my brother for 2 weeks. We put together a whole business plan. surprisingly enough, I could put together a business plan for them, but not myself. And said, just co-list it with us for 2 weeks and we'll sell all three of the units. And we did. We ended up, one of them collapsed, but we did get 2 out of 3 done in that 2 week period. And during that time, it was on a busy corner of a street. We put a huge sign out and we spent 7 days a week there doing open houses. Mm-hmm. And we picked up, another 8-9 deals out of that. We did half of our business directly from that one listing.
Right.
Or 3 listings for that entire year. Mm-hmm. Well, 6-month period in that year, I should say. So I guess you need to find the niche that works for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that requires trying a lot of things. It doesn't have to require investing a ton of money, but mm-hmm. don't be afraid to invest money. And a lot of money to be reinvested into your business. Mm-hmm. If you forget to do that, you're not going to grow. And you taught me that. You
mm-hmm.
you know, we looked at my business one day, and I was doing quite well at that point. And you said, where are you getting a lot of it from? And I said, I get a lot of business from the paper mailing I do. I've tested a million different things and watched how the market respond, or how people, consumers respond to it. And I found the ones that work the best for me and my target market. He's like, well, Mike says, how many of them are you sending out? And I said, well, once a quarter I send out, I can't remember what it was at the time, let's say 5,000 units or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, why don't you send out 5,000 a month instead of 5,000 a quarter?
Mm-hmm.
Or why not 10,000 a month? And I was like, huh. Damn, that's a really simple and good point. And then I started doing that, and lo and behold, it helped.
Right.
Twice of a good thing
mm-hmm.
Tends to make twice of a good result.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's having the analytics, the data points that are so key. You know, I think if agents are in their second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, even like any, and have any tenure, is doing that analysis is such a...
It's
like,
huge.
It's like, it's mind-blowing.
I learn something every year.
Yeah.
And your business will...
evolve.
It'll evolve.
Right.
That's exactly the word I was looking for. Your business will evolve, and you'll find that you're doing more of another thing, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Then focus on it.
Embrace the trends, right?
Yeah,
like, you exactly. know what? If... So, yeah. So, Rob and I have a very, very similar track. So, you know, he was basically a prospecting agent doing open houses to get started, because obviously for a variety of different reasons, Rob and I both started with no money. So, so, and very small networks.
Yeah.
So like, you know, what do you do?
Mike, cause he was unpopular in high school, and me because I was living in a new city.
Exactly. Me because I'm incredibly awkward and I have a podcast. So fuck you bullies.
The so, bullies are like, what's a podcast? I work at a gas station.
Exactly.
No, okay. That was, sounded a little weird.
Just kidding. But yeah, I think, it's really tough to have a podcast when you have a phone. Big deal, Mike.
Mike's got some really sophisticated equipment. We're exactly. talking into voice memos on his iPhone. And it appears to be the exact same iPhone case as me.
Yeah, it is. It is. Morgan just bought the iPhone 11. I think we're like twinsing.
Ours are like even kind of like wearing in the same spots. Exactly. And we got the same bag.
You know,
this is getting weird.
Yeah. So we're, you know, it's something that it's funny because Robin is a really, really, like, he's just a very cerebral guy. He's very numbers oriented. When I met Robin the first time, I think, what were you, the 6th or 7th or 8th or 10th agent here?
12 maybe?
Yeah, 11th or 12th realtor. So Robin was the 12th realtor that joined Opus/Oakwin. Oakwin, realty. Opus is no more. So
goodbye, Opus.
Yeah. And so, you know, we've been working together for a long time, and, you know, there's a bunch of, like, I've seen some pretty incredible growth. Obviously, over the last 6 years we've been working together, it's been pretty amazing.
It's been awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, well, for both of us.
Yeah.
It's been pretty incredible. Both of our teams, businesses, etc., have grown significantly. Oakland's business has grown significantly.
Yeah.
More than significantly. Incredibly.
Well, it's power of prayer.
I don't think it was that. So,
and you know, it's funny because we've had so many, like, I have so many anecdotal stories with Robin along the way. I remember, and I'm just gonna share them because I'm just gonna throw him under the bus. But like, we used to be in a a small windowless office, or sorry, a small wallless office, right? Remember the old office on Camby?
It was just a bunch of desks rammed up against each other where nobody had any privacy. Exactly. And when somebody took a loud phone call, you were kind of out of luck.
Exactly. And we had, yeah, so we were just in like really tight and contained quarters. And I remember Robin and I were working so closely together, you know, and I was observing his business. I'm like, this guy's on like a, I had so much faith in Robin when I first met him. I'm like, this is
more than I did.
Oh my, you know.
I remember the first time we sat down and you were like, I don't like to talk about numbers, but you told me that I could make quite a large sum of money, probably about triple what I was making at the time, the following year if I wanted to. And I was like, that's all fine and good for you to say, but you're also giving me a sales pitch to join your firm.
Right.
And realistically speaking, I didn't do it in a year, but I did it in two. And the following year, I did 2/3 of it. It was incredible. But the interesting part, I'm sorry, I'm interrupting and tangenting again, but like, anywhere else I'd worked, I'd never really been given any kind of encouragement that way. No one had ever even, I didn't even really realize that that was a tangible thing. I guess had never entered my mind, and once it did, I was like, maybe I can do this. I don't know.
I think there's something to be said about, you know, just having that belief yourself, but also, you know, because, you know, it's funny. It's like you see the new agents now, and you see the same things, right? You're like, oh my god, like this guy could be a monster, like.
Oh yeah, you can pick him. Yeah.
Yeah, and like I met Robin, and I was like, man, he's doing so many things wrong. it'd be like watching this like supreme athlete or something like that. Like just his mechanics are just awful. But
like,
he's just like this
flying
big,
by the seat of my
pants.
Yeah,
I'm like, oh my god,
no,
like,
systems.
Yeah, I was like, oh my god, and this guy can still churn out 10, 11, 12 deals a year, you know. And I think you were on a bit of a, like when we met, you were on a bit of you were in a bit of a funk, from what I remember.
Yeah, that previous year had just not been great.
Yeah.
It was, I don't know, I don't even really remember why at this point.
Yeah.
I definitely felt like I was a little bit rutted.
Yeah, and it just like, it didn't make any sense to me because I was like, hey, this is a very capable guy, very intelligent, easy to like, he's super, like.
You just call me easy?
Oh, yeah. we all know that. That's why your fly's undone.
Oh, jeez. Sorry about that. Awkward. Fortunately, this isn't a video interview.
Exactly. But, yeah, just, like, you know, you see these people, like, you see these people, and you're like, oh, my, like, you have so much potential. It's just, and it's funny, I think, having some.
Now I'm tearing up.
Yeah. Having some, like, you know, looking at it from the outsider's perspective, you're like, wow, this guy is like, you know, he's charming, he's charismatic, he will be hardworking if put on rails, you know, like it's putting things on rails. And so I was like, man, this is just, he just needs some simple systems. And if this guy has some simple systems, he's gonna just like, he's like a rocket. He'll just go, he's running, he's meandering, like, you know, and I'm doing this hand motion right now of meandering, which is going back and forth, like zigzagging. But I'm like, if this guy goes on rails and just goes straight, he's just gonna like just crush it. And he has, you know. So Robin's been a medallion realtor for the last 4 years, you know, from and he will
master
be
master medallion next.
He's gonna be a master medallion, so he's 5 years medallion. He's been a medallion ever since he's been a part of our office. So, and you know, for the last five years, he's gonna be a master medallion. He's won every sales award at our company. And basically, in last year, which is the most important award for me, he won Oakwoonite of the Year, which exemplifies Oakwood's core value system and what we do as a company in terms of creating a community and being a great advocate and member.
It's quite an unexpected honor.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because, so at Oakwood, we call ourselves real estate nerds. Do you know why we call ourselves real estate nerds?
I guess because we're just so into it.
It's because of you, actually. Because I met you, And I was like, this is a real estate nerd. And like, you knew price per square foot of every building at Yale Town Park. And you were, and I kept on asking. Remember I was asking you like for pricing all the time?
Mike did used to get me to do a statement.
He'd be like, hey, I've got a listing presentation at X. What's it worth?
Yeah. He would rattle the statistics and he would rattle the numbers off the top of his head. And I was like, Robin is a real estate nerd. And he's just like, and I was like, and it made me like, that was something, I kind of had one of those eureka moments. And I was like, you know, and then I called all the Oakwoodites real estate nerds, because like, that was, we're not agents. We're like, we're really into, and you know, we are really into real estate.
Right? And we do have a lot of really fantastic agents that are nerds in their own different way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have a mathematical formula for pricing that's just constantly going on in my head. Like, Jeff Appleby, that guy is...
Yeah, he's...
Stats
kind of... Exactly.
like, we have a bunch of different people that have pretty amazing, really specified skill sets.
Yeah, it's pretty...
And one of the great things about where we work, and one of the reasons why I haven't looked back for a moment since I joined Oakland, is... that we all help each other and work together, so we all take advantage of those things. It's rare, because I mean, I've only worked in two other brokerages prior to Oakwin, but I've certainly spoken to lots of brokerages and spoken to lots of agents over the whatever it is 12 years I've been in business now, and most agencies aren't like that, simply stated.
Mm-hmm.
Michael is my direct competitor. We actually have listing presentations against each other, mm-hmm. more often than I think any other agent mm-hmm. in the office. I think I compete against you, and I compete against Morgan and maybe like Christy Asako sometimes. Right. But that doesn't. There's so much business out there.
Yeah.
There's so much, even though we're in a city where there's a ludicrous number, 14,000 agents or something right now. There's still plenty of business for all of us to be successful if we work hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so why not have some camaraderie in your office? Why not share good ideas when you have them? Why not help other people be successful and have them help you be successful?
And you know, something that I've been kind of fermenting in my own like
closet.
Yeah, in my closet over there. We're in my office right now. Yeah. Exactly. It's the kimchi. something that I've been it's fermenting in my mind is the idea of teaching others is the best education for yourself.
It is.
It's crazy.
When you explain it to somebody else, you suddenly understand it better. And sometimes they'll give you a different perspective too, and you can take away so much from it. And it just like re-embeds it into your mind.
Yeah, like Robin, I see Robin with new agents all the time, having conversations, going over comparables, doing things, and he's reinforcing good fundamentals. He's telling people... And it's almost like telling the younger version of you what to do. And you're like, oh yeah, I forgot. I should call that old client and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's funny when you're going through stuff like that, you're like, geez, that's something I actually haven't done recently.
Yeah, exactly,
and
right?
And then like you remember, like you know this stuff, but you just get so set in a routine sometimes you forget some of the basics.
Right. And you know, I think when you're on an island, and I was talking to a few agents, there was an agent that I just talked to, and he was like, okay, I love your brand. I think it's a cool brand. I like the people that can help with open houses, but I really want to work in an island on my own. I don't want to be bothered. I don't want all this stuff. Like, and he was talking to me about that. And I was like, you know, which for a lot of realties would kind of be like the dream realtor, like high producer, sits on an island on his own, doesn't want to take part in everything. Awesome.
Yeah.
But you know, I was
make like, us money and stay out of our sight.
Yeah, exactly. And occasionally ask for some support once in a while, and I was like, you know, this doesn't work for me. Like, you know, it's just it's because, you know, they're not going to contribute. They're just going to kind of, you know, I was like, what would happen if your one agent gave you a call and said, hey, so and so, can I take you out for a coffee to learn about your business? He just directly and flatly said, I don't have time for that, man. I said, you do have time for that. We all have time for that, because you were in the same position before, so it's not going to work. So, you know, so we still have those conversations. And it's something that, you know, just remember how, I don't know if you had that experience. I had that experience when I first started. No one wanted to meet me when I first started.
Yeah, so, I mean, oh my God. The brokerage I started at, I actually really like the brokerage, and they're an amazing group of people there, and an amazing, like, people that I still do business with who refer business to me. And looking back on it, I was happy to have started there. But, I mean, I was, what was the year?
The year was 2008.
I was 27. So you guys can do the math if you want. I'm old. And there, I think that aside from my brother and I, who pretty much started at the same time, there is one other person that was under 40, and then basically nobody else was under, like, I think 45 or 50. Like, mm-hmm. And it was a brokerage of like 60 plus agents. So we were very much the young guys. And I think that there is some slight stigma attached to that, particularly as we did very well in our first while there. And it was an office where every deal that was done by somebody in the office was put up on a board publicly. And the, like, yeah, Barton name that. On the board. Like, I had people say, you've got a target on your back in a sales meeting. when I was first introduced to the office, an older agent, well, they sort of had us introduce ourselves, and they said, well, what did you do before you were in real estate? And an older agent interrupted me and said, he was probably in high school. I was like, oh, thanks for that warm welcome, vicious old bitch. but yeah, there's definitely, it was interesting.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was hard. There were agents that would take advantage of new agents and be like, oh, you can do my open house for me if you give me 50% of any lead that you make. And I thought in my head, like, this doesn't sound normal. Like, if I'm doing your open house for you, it's probably doing you a favor, because your clients probably want you to do an open house, and you probably want to take the weekend off and spend it with, like, your great grandchildren or whatever.
Right.
and so I was just like, no. I was like, want me to do an open house for you, I'll do it, and if I pick up a client, they're mine, because I worked hard to pick up that client while doing work for you.
You know, it's good that you recognize that. You know, as Robin knows, I did not, so I took those deals. and I was like,
Mike was like, yes sir.
Sure thing. Like, I remember referring 50% of my commissions to realtors that never met the client. Like, they never met the client. Then not only did they never met the client, the realtor that I was referring the business to didn't even know they existed. Like, and so, like, I was like,
there's no checker balance there.
It's just an honor system.
Just honest Mike.
Yeah. Good old honest Mike. Honest Dave. Free the slaves. No, I'm just kidding. That's a bit different. So, like, it was just like a, it was really like, yeah, it's just like some savage. And I think things, you know, as you kind of get older and you reflect back on your, like, time in your professional life, you just recognize these mistakes you made, and these, like, things that you did wrong. What, like, looking back and seeing, like, some of those things, like, what were some of the markers? What were some of the things, like, if you could redo it, like, what big mistakes did you make?
That's a good question. I mean, I don't know if I can call not planning well a big mistake, because I didn't even know at the time that it was something that I could do. I think that I probably shouldn't have started my business in Victoria. I don't really regret it, but I think that if I'd started in Vancouver, I would have had a better foothold. I think.
How about, like, the things you did, like, the.
That's a tough one. I don't know.
Some of the, you know, while Rob's mulling it, and the, what is that thing when windows, like, that little hourglass is, like, spinning around. I can see it above his head, actually. you know,
it's glowing bright.
I didn't bet on myself enough, and I was,
that's actually a great
one. I really didn't bet on myself. I was really chicken. I was really, really chicken. And because I was chicken, I was really super conservative with my business. My business used to be, so now, you know, I spend money on marketing, and Rob was one of the guys that taught me how to spend money on marketing. But you know, now I spend money on marketing. I never used to spend a dime. I would be like, okay, it's all a sham. It's all like smoke and mirrors. I shouldn't spend a dime. I should save every penny and be grateful that I had it. And, you know, and so I started to invest in my business.
I do remember showing you a form letter and then you taking it and applying it mass when I just like used it here and there and being like, oh, I built this and I wrote it and it works really well. I always get leads from it. And then the next year Mike was like, oh yeah, when you gave me that form letter, I made $100,000 last year. I was like, excuse me?
I was so like, probably in my farm area too. It was not, it was a... Was it partially
in my farm area?
Okay. Jerk. Lesson.
It was a good lesson.
So Robin showed me his... So, and this is the great part about collaborating as well. Robin showed me his direct mail campaign. I never used to do direct mail because I thought it was too expensive. So I never used to do... I used to only do flyers. So I would do like general mailbox because they were 10 cents a copy. Robin showed me how to do direct mail outs.
I had this binder with like see-through plastic sleeves in it. And every time I sent out mail, I would write where I sent it to. I put a sample of it in there. So I knew like what the branding and everything looked like, whether it was a postcard or a letter. I would put it into this sleeve, and with it, I would put in like a receipt for how much it cost, how many I sent out, where I sent it out to, and then how many calls I got, how many emails I got, how many of those turned into meetings, and how many of those turned into deals, or at least continuing conversations for potential future business. And what I learned quite rapidly was that if I sent out 10,000 mail walk units, postcards or something like that, like something that you've probably all gotten in your mailbox and thrown into a recycle box pretty quickly, like a just sold, like there's a picture of a property, it says just sold, it says, you know, what the list price was, it says what brokerage, and it says call me for a free evaluation or something basic and realtory. And I remember sending out 10,000 of those one day to like my farm area, and I remember getting one phone call. I remember sitting and waiting and getting one phone call, and that one phone call was like a pretty solid fuck off. Like it was like, please stop sending shit to my house. And thinking, okay, well, you can't win them all. And maybe, you know, some people took these up to their apartments and I'll get calls in the next few weeks. I got no other calls from it. That was it. And I tried a lot of mail walks because it is attractive. They're like, yeah, anywhere from 10 to 15 cents per unit to get out. But they might be good for increasing your brand awareness, for being one more thing in front of people. But I found that direct mail, although it costs more than 10 times the price, particularly now, and I mean sometime, what was it, about 4 years ago when they basically doubled the price of postage stamps. They were like 45 cents and the next day they were 89. Mm-hmm. I continue to do it, and I can, like, the direct mail campaigns, they just work. Mm-hmm. People take them up to their apartment. And I mean, I'm talking obviously about condos, but something that is directly addressed to a person tends to be more likely to make it past the floor of their mailroom.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, just as a quick story. So, and this is a great part about collaborating, because Robin, like in your career, like this is gross. Now, I don't want to say this. Being gaudy. How much have you probably like directly earned from those mail outs?
If you say directly, do you mean like specifically from a mail out, or do you mean like the tree of referrals that may have come from a client?
Yeah, tree, exactly. Yeah.
Well, probably $1 million.
$1 million, right?
And in gross income. Yeah. I mean, probably more, but I would say I could safely say that my direct mail outs have resulted in at least a gross income of $1 million.
Yeah. And, you know, without being gaudy, like I would say the same thing, if not more. And so
probably more.
Yeah. Probably, because, you know, I recognized, you know, so I'm pouring Robin the finest maker's mark
whiskey. It is a nice bourbon.
It is, okay. So.
Finest might be a stretch. Might may need a little education, but it is still quite delicious.
And because of Robin, you know, and he showed me his direct mail campaign, I used to use a regular mailbox, which did have some return too. There was return on the mail.
Well, you can get return.
Everything works. Everything works. But those direct mail campaigns, I tell you, over 6 years at least. And
some might say I bought his house for
him. Well, but then, I hope you don't.
I'm moving in. Robin, yes, I'm moving in.
Robin is the guest room. But but you learn these things, and it's just like. And I don't think, I hope you don't feel any begrudging, feelings.
Oh, yeah, I'm super upset. No, I honestly, there is a possibility that I've lost some business due to helping Mike.
Oh, really? You think so?
Yeah, I'm sure that, well, I know for sure that I've lost at least a couple listings to you in the Crosstown Farm area.
Right.
We've competed and you've won. Nobody knows why.
No one could guess. We've co-listed a bunch of them.
We've co-listed a couple. Yeah, overall, so much more business has been done by both of us in general due to our collaboration.
Right.
I taught Mike how to do this. Mike taught me how to do it more. And as a result, I could have continued to make, X dollars from doing the amount of mail out campaigns I was, but instead, Mike's making 10 times that amount and I'm making 10 times that amount, because we had a conversation about it and worked together and he took an idea that was good for me and he made it better and gave it back to me. And it's just, that's awesome.
Yeah. And
two minds are better than one most of the time.
And it's for me, it was just a huge revenue stream for my business, and it did do so much, and I don't thank you enough for that. Actually,
you don't need to thank me.
Yeah,
and I can't. You took me to six times the income that more than six times the income that I started at, and it might not be 100% due to you, but you definitely lit the fire. And without that, I have no idea where my business would be.
And it's such a good, it's such a good feeling to it's weird. It's kind of like when you're soldiers, you go to war with someone, you have this bond together. Cause I feel Robin and I have been through a lot of different things together. We've been through I remember when we had to switch the brand over. And Robin was one of the guys that I was like, okay, what would he think? It has to be better. Because if the brand isn't better, then Robin's going to freaking leave. And I'm going to be I'm screwed. And it has to be because it's funny. We were talking and it's interesting that I did a podcast with Dylan.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if I've told you this before. Did I tell you that I built the ideal Oakland agents? I actually drew what an ideal open agent looks like and the characteristics of each.
That's hilarious. I'd like to see this.
Yeah, exactly. So Morgan, Arlene and I did this exercise where we drew our ideal customers. And this is something that you can do in a business. You can actually draw your ideal customers and you need to speak to that.
Oh God, mine would be a series of stick figures.
Yeah.
Stick figures with pockets full of money. My ideal client.
So,
Robin, I'd like to indiscriminately buy real estate forever.
Exactly. you build this is an exercise. You actually build your ideal, and I built my ideal client for my resale business. I built my ideal client for I built the ideal realtors that I would like to work for, in real estate, and it was and when I met you, I was like, this is the type of agent that I would want to work with, someone that is committed, a bit lost, is smart enough to know a good idea when they see one, but not too too hard, like not too soft to just take on any advice that they take, you know, so like get veered around very easily. And I kind of like wrote it out, and yeah, so you know, it was, and I modeled my ideal male customer after you. Wow. Yeah, and so it's just like, okay, what, and so when I think about programs, so I think about Oakland University.
I hope you guys heard that.
I know, it's pretty crazy.
I'm Michael's ideal male.
There you go. When I talk about like Oakland University.
He touched my arm when he said that.
Yeah, exactly, I did. I'm just going to lock this door.
Oh, dear.
This is not an office. This is something else. Yeah, and I just, you know, because you want to make sure you're speaking to the right person. And I'm sure you have some ideal clients. Like, these are, like, the type of people you want to serve, and your messaging goes towards those people.
Yeah.
So when we were doing all the Oakland stuff, like, you know, we built, like, ideal customers.
I actually really like this idea. It's, like, a good visualization. I remember the first time somebody told me about making a vision board, and I was like, this sounds kind of like... horse shitty. But then I made one, and like I stuck it in front of my desk because I was like, you know what, I'm open to ideas, I'm gonna be open-minded.
Yeah,
I'm not that old yet, although getting damn close.
No, like in business, like in as a real estate business, your prime, like from the books at least, is 45 to 53. That's your prime.
Like after I want to be retired.
Yeah, I know. But that's actually when, like, if you think, I don't want to fit in this way, but that's kind of the, from the books, like, that's when agent peaks. That's when an agent peaks. Like, we're not even close to peaking.
But I think that's probably because that's when you have such a huge network of people that, like, you literally just need to sit by the phone. I mean, obviously, that's not the best way to build your business, but you probably don't even need to build at that point.
So
you have so many people that are calling you and sending you referrals, presuming you've run your business intelligently.
Yeah. Fortunately enough, like Rob and I are both like career realtors. We started out in our early 20s. What ends up happening is you go through cycles. So you go through your first 5 years, you build up your first 5 years of clients. Then you go into your second 5 years, you build up like those second 5 years plus the first 5 years. And you're just on these cycles.
Yeah.
Like, how many calls do you get a year before someone's like, okay, you sold me a place in 2010, it's time to go now, it's 2019, like...
Yeah, I mean, I had a call this morning. I listed a property for a financial planner that I work with, back in the good old days when we were able to do this, I actually represented both buyer and seller on this. The buyer walked into the open house, and it was pretty much an open and shut deal. They liked it exactly as it was. They bought it with the furniture. They happened to have a loose connection with my wife, so we were able to kind of jive on that pretty much right away. And they bought it, and now they want to sell it.
That was five years ago, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was, what would it have been? 2015, yeah.
Yeah,
early 2015.
4 years ago.
And they just, so that's right in that cycle length. Mm-hmm. People own a condo for 3 to 5 years most of the time,
yeah.
From my experience. And they just called me and they're like, come by and list my property.
Yeah.
Just like that.
Right. And, you know, the first 5 years, you don't get those calls.
Nope. You don't get a single one of those in 5 years. Mm-hmm. Well, you might get one or two. And when you do, you're like, oh my God, this is so awesome. Somebody called me and I didn't have to do anything.
Right. Yeah. But like, you know, that's when the cycle starts coming around, you know, especially once you build some tenure, because you're almost at, you know, you're at 12 years. I'm at 13 years. So, like, you know, I'm entering into my third cycle, but, like, you know, imagine getting into our fifth and sixth cycles, like, you know, for, you know, to not put it that way. But
I might be dead then.
So it's just like, you know, so you kind of, that's like typically when you, like, from when you business peak. I think physical peak is probably like for men, what do they say, 19 or something? 18?
Oh, God, I don't know. That's depressing.
Let's yeah, isn't that like crazy?
It. That means we're like double that.
But I think people like, well, you keep pretty healthy, right?
Well, I would say that the
Your
last...
Your wife is really fucking healthy.
My heavens.
My fiance is healthy too.
We do have a couple of healthy wives.
Yeah,
me too. I would say that probably over the last 12 to 18 months, I have been less healthy than I would like.
Oh, yeah? Why?
I think I got caught up in the entire process of building a family and having a family.
Oh, yeah. Well, Robin just
had a baby. Yeah. I didn't myself. Thank God. My wife and I had a baby in December, so we now have a 9.5-month-old daughter. And it was a struggle for us to have a baby. It took a long time and a lot of various procedures. And through that whole process, I became pretty busy with that, along with being very, very busy at work, and stopped paying attention to things like having a personal trainer and going to the gym. So it's been like a year and a bit since I've like consistently gone to the gym. I do yoga and stuff, but it's not as consistent as I'd like, and I need to get back into it. I need to start making time. And obviously it's been a pretty big adjustment having a child. And when I wake up in the morning, like, I'm there in the morning and I'm there in the evening, but like a lot of realtors, I often work 7 days a week when I'm not actually on a, like, in quotes, vacation, like, you know, away visiting somebody or in another country or something like that. So I like to try and spend as much time with my daughter as I can. So when I wake up in the morning, I want to spend time with my daughter, and I do baby-related tasks. And then when I get home, I do the same thing. Mm-hmm. Anyways, I kind of forgot where I was going with this.
Your health.
Yeah. So I used to go to the gym first thing in the morning. Thanks, Mike. I used to go to the gym first thing in the morning, but if I do that, 3 days a week like I used to, then that kind of cuts out that morning part of it. Like I can't wake up at 4 and hang out with my daughter and then,
right,
like that. Nobody's going to like that, particularly me. So I do need to find a way to fit it back in, even if it is on a smaller scale.
Yeah.
But sadly, I've got a bit of a dad bod.
Well, it's in now.
I have an ab.
It's all, you know, it's always been in for me.
But, that was a fist bump.
Yeah.
As you guys couldn't see.
I think, this is just something that people have told me. Obviously, I don't have kids, so, you know, it might be... Yet, I would love to, you know, my dream would be to have 4 kids.
Oh, sweet mother of God.
I know.
That frightens me.
I had, like...
Jay's got his third on the way.
I know, jeez. Jay McInnes, who's been on the pod, a guest of the pod, has 4 kids.
No,
sorry,
3
kids. He's going to have 3.
Well, he will have 3.
Yeah. And, like, yeah, I just, you know, I grew up with... You only had your brother, but I grew up with a brother and 3 sisters, and... One of the top 10 joys of my life.
I might not know that you had a brother.
Yeah, I have a brother. Yeah, I have a brother. His name's Alex. I should have him on the pod.
Oh, you've told me about Alex.
Yeah. Okay. And he's a property manager at Cadillac Fairview. He is awesome. He's like he came up with me to Whistler on Monday to check out like the engagement, and he like posed in different places that you could possibly get engaged.
I need
it was
to
so
meet
dark.
Alex someday.
He's a great guy. Like, yeah,
I've only met 50% of your siblings.
I know, you haven't met my eldest sister as well. She's actually, if you ever...
Spud sister.
My Spud sister. So I have an elder sister, her name's Adrienne, and she is...
Elder sister. I'm sure she loves to be referred to that way.
She doesn't care.
She's an elder in the U tribe.
She was like a parent to us. Like, she was basically, she's 4 years older than me, but she was like the queen. And so, like, we all, like, bow down. And so, yeah, she's super intelligent, super smart. And, like, one of the top 10 joys of my life is to have, like, my brothers and sisters. I don't think...
I cannot
agree more.
You're
so close with Nick, right?
Like, even if I really only wanted one child, which is tempting, I have such a good relationship with my brother. And I know not everybody has a good relationship with their siblings or all of their siblings, but I think that, like, I have such... My brother and I have been best friends our entire lives. Even when we were bickering kids, we still backed each other up. Like, you know, you might go crying to your parents when you're a child, but you'd never make it out to be as bad as it was if it was bad. Like,
right.
We always protected each other, and we've always been really, really good friends. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that I would want to take that possibility away from a child. Because it's just like, it's such a cool thing to have that lifelong person that you're so close with. Like, when you're an adult, it's hard to make a new friend that becomes a good friend. Mm-hmm. Like the people that you grew up with them, so you have all this history.
Right.
And the people that you went to high school with, you have this high school history. So even people that you didn't talk to since high school, you can like reminisce about some funny thing from high school or whatever. College, maybe the same thing. But then once you're kind of out of that, like it's hard. Like you make friends at work, but outside of that, like making a good friend, somebody you need to spend time with, and being able to, particularly in a city lifestyle, being able to take the time to spend time with somebody, isn't easy for professionals, particularly when you're trying to afford living in Vancouver.
Oh yeah.
So it's hard. Like I've made friends in Oakland, but I don't even know if I can think of anybody that I've made friends with in Vancouver outside of that and maybe like my wife's circle since I moved back here. So I think like giving somebody a built-in potential lifelong friend is a pretty amazing gift.
It is, and you know, so there's,
even if it costs an extra ticket on a flight every time you go on vacation.
Exactly, that's how the traveler thinks. Yeah, like they say, so like these are in psychological texts. So you have obviously your parents, right? So your parents are with you until the, you know, and then, you know, sad life, but you know, they stop being with you 20 or 30 years until you're, you know, until you expire, until they, you know, bad to say, but they, you know, they're at the end of your life, they're not going to be there. Your partner, your wife, your, you know, significant other, or your husband, your significant other is only going to be with you probably after the first 20 or 15 or 25, or in my case, the first 33 years of my life, I didn't have pre. So she's with me for the back end, the rest of my back end of my life. But your brothers and sisters are with you your entire life, your whole, like, basically they're in your fellowship, they're in your group, they're the X-Men with you as you travel through every stage of your life, as you go through being a baby, to being a toddler, to being a child, to being a young adolescent, to being a teenager, to being a young adult, to being an adult, to being a, you know, a responsible adult, to gaining independence, to being a responsible adult, to having families at the same time, to seeing kids have kids, and through the geriatric part of your life. They're actually going to be with you the whole way through your existence, and it is a very, very valuable, it's a very valuable part of my existence. So myself and Arlene, obviously my partner, my business partner, is also my sister, and Morgan, who's also my business partner, has three brothers and sisters herself. So yeah, so it's a pretty impactful relationship that you're gonna have with your siblings. It's really cool. How's Nick doing?
He's doing really well.
Yeah.
He's also a real estate agent, estate agent in Victoria.
Long pod.
What's a normal pod length?
Like, well, Robin actually has never listened to a pod, so like,
God.
I'm
out of the closet now.
So he's a, what do we call him, a pod virgin or a virgin pod?
VP.
Yeah, so he's a VP. And so this is his first time ever. You've never even listened to a pod.
On the weekend I drove to Braylorn and back. You can Google that, nobody knows where it is. Population 68. And on the way back, the last half, my wife and I listened to a podcast, and it was the first time I've ever listened to a podcast. So there you go. I've always kind of meant to. I've got two different apps for it on my phone, but I don't know why I haven't gotten.
Well, you got to listen to your own podcast because you love yourself that much. So you got to.
If I had my own podcast, I'd listen the shit out of it.
Well, the one that you have with me, you got to listen to that one. So
I will definitely.
Yeah. So yeah, our pods are normally an hour. We're a little bit over an hour right now. So,
anyways. My brother's great.
Yeah.
He recently got engaged, just
like
you.
Oh, really? Cool.
Like a week apart, something like that. Maybe 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Seems really happy. Had a great time hanging out with him and his new fiance the other day. He popped into town for a day and a bit. We actually did the legal update course together, which is nice.
Yeah.
He kind of left it to the last minute. He needed to relicense in a week, so
right.
He was like, oh, better do it in Vancouver. But
did he stay with you?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, we sometimes do that. I'll pop over there and do a course with him, or he'll do one here with me, because it's kind of fun. And it's also a good way to network. I think the first time I did, when I was in Victoria, I did a course in Vancouver for Kix once, for no good reason, I don't think, and got referred a listing out of it.
Oh, wow. Like,
within a month. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Back on the business track.
Yeah.
Out of the family one.
Right.
But anyways, yeah, Nick's doing great.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. And Nick's an agent from Victoria. He was getting a few referrals from...
He's with Coldwell Banker Oceanside over there, and he does a lot of referral business from Oakland.
Oh, okay.
I promote him. but he's also come over and done some happy hours
at the office and
things like that, and buys a bunch of drinks, and he's handled clients for at least 15 or 20 different agents at our office.
That's amazing. I think I sent him something, but
That listing like in near Duncan.
Yeah.
That big, huge house.
Right. Yeah. I forgot, and where's my referral check? No, just kidding. I don't care. This is good. And so, you know, just as a, I think for as a closing note for, you know, the listeners, because Robin is, you know, obviously being 4 years medallion, going to be a 5-year medallion realtor. And we talked about maybe some lessons learned or some things you would have done again. So maybe you can say that your top three tips for an agent that wants to
start business. Well, I never actually said about what were mistakes.
Yeah. So maybe we'll talk about mistakes and we'll talk about like top three tips.
So I did give a little bit more thought to my mistakes, and I think I'm not so conceited that I think I didn't make any, that's for certain. I made plenty. But I think the number one thing that I didn't do in real estate starting out was treat it as a business and build systems. Mm. I know I said I didn't really know that that was a thing because I didn't, and nobody really told me that. But a lot of I speak to so many new agents at Oakland because I like to, and like Mike said, you learn a lot from teaching, and I also really enjoy teaching and helping people. And I can't stress enough, put systems in place. When I say use a CRM, which I'm still not good at using, if you use it from your first day of work, it will be a system that you are used to.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have 3 clients, it does seem weird to pay for a CRM and use it. But it won't seem weird when you're super used to using it every day and you've got 400 clients and it's telling you who to contact because you haven't contacted them in enough time or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That, I would say, is my number one regret, is not knowing that I needed to treat this more like a business, put systems in place.
Right.
And also, like Mike said, I don't think I put enough faith in myself. You need to invest hard in yourself. You need to invest emotionally in yourself. You need to invest financially in yourself. And you need to have faith in your own ability to succeed, because it is a completely self-disciplined profession. And you have the choice of making $0 or having pretty much zero salary cap. If you want to work hard enough, you can make as much money as any other profession in the world. I mean,
you can be like a professional athlete money.
You can. There are agents that make professional athlete money. Maybe not top professional athlete money, but good still.
Right, yeah. They're like world class.
And that was something that I kind of, I never really did. I remember when I first sat down with Michael, I said to him, I never want to be one of those like agents. At the time, I thought that like top agents, this sounds super naive, but, or maybe it's news to a listener. I said I never want to be one of those agents that makes like $500,000 a year, because I don't want to work that hard. And it wasn't because I don't have work ethic. It was just because I don't want, a big mantra in my life has been that I don't want to live to work. I want to work to live, because living for me is a lot more important than working. Mm-hmm. And I'm never going to, that doesn't mean I'm going to let down clients because I want to go do something else. It just means that I'm not going to take on clients that I can't handle while still enjoying my life. But what I didn't realize is that you can meet and surpass any of those goals and still have all those things dependent on how you build your business and if you build it correctly. If you plan, if you have a team, I have a team now. It's a struggle building a team, because people come and go, and that may not affect their life as much, but it's
business.
When you have to train somebody and then they leave 2 days later, it's hard and it affects your business and you have to readjust. So that was a big one. Another one I would say is plan before you start a team. You get to that point where you think you have to start a team. If you're in panic mode and you're like, oh my God, I'm so busy, I need an assistant, that's not the time to hire an assistant.
Right.
Be super busy. Take it on. And go home at night and spend an hour each night planning on how you're going to best utilize that assistant.
Mm-hmm.
Put together a business plan. Put together a manual. And then hire them. Mike knows. I went through a few assistants and buyer's agents and a lot of things, and I kind of learned the hard way by like hiring people and then realizing that I just totally fucked it.
Yeah. And it's not like, their fault. They're fine.
Yeah, like
people.
A lot of the time,
yeah.
Like, they were fine, but it was like the way that I started the relationship.
Yeah.
Like my first assistant, Mike, loved to tell this story. You want to tell this story?
I love this story. So
my first assistant.
So Rob's first assistant. Rob's like, Mike, man, I'm so busy. I'm swamped. Like, you know, I got so many things on the go. I'm like, can't take care of my stuff. I'm like, okay, cool. Like, and I met this person. They're getting a license. They're moving here from Victoria. Or I think I can't remember. Exactly.
No, they weren't licensed.
Yeah,
they're
sorry. They're unlicensed.
Unlicensed person.
Yeah, they're unlicensed, but they're thinking about it. They're like some talking about real estate. Or was it a friend of yours that was getting?
I was
yeah.
like a friend's friend.
Yeah, friend's friend of yours that referred you, and basically, I remember day one where she's getting started. Monday morning, 9 o'clock. I see this like doe eyed person walk into our windowless office and like hi, and I was like hello. I'm Robin's new assistant. I'm like, oh, hi. And then I started talking to her a little bit. And then I think like half an hour or 45 minutes, like 9:45, Robin saunters in wearing his gym clothes.
Like, sweaty.
Like sweaty from the gym. He's like, oh, hey, nice to meet you. Like, I'm Robin. I was like, and then Robin's like, yeah, so he starts training her and everything like that. And then I think she went for a lunch break. And I was like, Rob, can I talk to you for a sec? And so we have a quick second. I was like, Rob, you should fire that assistant immediately. he's like, why? Like, she seems great. She seems great. He's like, she's great. You're an idiot. She is great. You're an idiot. You've already ruined this whole relationship.
You set a really poor precedent.
You set
really
the worst precedent in the entire world. Like, fire her immediately. And I think I remember
I at least 3 more months.
Like, yeah, 3 more months. And he's like, Mike, I should have fired her immediately.
And the worst part is that I actually didn't quite learn from that. I still kind of screwed up on the next few. No, I did all right. But then I still made some of the same mistakes.
Yeah.
It's tough. Going from, being somebody that's completely self-sufficient and runs your own business and getting it to a stage where you are so busy that you need help, and then suddenly realizing you need to become an employer. Being an employer is being a business owner is one thing. Being an employer is a completely different story.
Mm-hmm.
And it requires a lot of forethought. And I went into it without the first few times around. Anyways, so I think those are some of my...
Yeah.
What was the other question?
Some mistakes, but before we, I just want to unpack those systems because, you know, I think when people think about systems, they feel like they're super complex, complicated.
Oh God, so, they aren't.
Exactly. Okay. So Rob just kind of like, you know, broke the, the two-way mirror, whatever it is. The systems that Robin is talking about are not complex systems. Robin has a system where he uses a whiteboard. He has a whiteboard system where he puts all his leads on the whiteboard.
I'm a visual person.
Yeah.
I use a CRM, that's client management software, but I don't utilize it well. You know what I utilize well? Pieces of paper and whiteboards. And I've realized that although I still use my CRM because I like to have a digital copy of everything and I try to be as paperless as possible, when I've got people that I'm working with, if I walk into my office and they're on a whiteboard right in front of me, I'm reminded immediately. Doesn't matter how busy I am, doesn't matter how many emails I have to get back to, doesn't matter if I have an appointment in 5 minutes, it's right there in front of my eyes. I don't have to open a program. I don't have to get a notification. I don't have to do anything. And that works for me. Some people are going to be more digitally oriented. The new generation is probably more inclined to look at the app that pops up on their phone. I guess I'm a little old.
We're on the bridge. Like, we're in that transition, right?
But it's... Honestly, systems don't need to be complex.
Yeah.
They just need to be there. The consistency is like one of the most important things in our business. Being consistent with your follow-up, being consistent with your marketing plans, being consistent with the way that you deal with your clients. And you literally can just write a bullet point list of like 5 things for each of those things and then just follow those bullet points each time you meet a new client, follow those 5 bullets. Each time a client sells something, follow those 5 bullets.
So I've obviously seen Rob's system. It's not like, you know, it's not rocket science. It's not something. It is not something you need to go to engineering school for. Like, it is very, very simple. It's a series of checklists. It's a series of, for him, Rob and I are both office guys. Like, we like to go into the office. We like, you know, if we don't have appointments, we go back to the office and we, you know, we're that, that's ours, you know. I guess, I don't know if that's pretty old school, but then I know you're like that. I'm like,
works for me. If I'm at home, I get distracted too easily. And I also find that at the office, there are great work influences. I learn things from people that have been in the business for 20 minutes and 20 years. And when people are talking about their new listings, yeah, we've all got access to MLS and we can Google search every listing that's out there. But sometimes somebody's like, hey, I just listed this new place. And you're like, holy shit, that's perfect for my client. How do I not know that already?
Right.
And just being in an office for me increases my business by a decent amount.
I think for me, I've always had an office. When I'm at home, I'm like super lethargic. I'm just like,
yeah.
But you're like,
I'm gonna go pee again. Oh, I'm gonna go make a snack. Exactly. You know, just like watch one episode on Netflix, but it turns into 3.
I just can't. Every time we're in my office right now at my house. But like, I have a couch in my office at my house because I nap there. Like, and that's like work napping. And so, you know, it's just not a conducive environment to get production for the most part. It's like staring at my weird office stuff. So
I'm staring at your like weird caricature.
Yeah, I have that caricature because like so I have a caricature on the wall in my office.
It's pretty creepy.
Yeah, it's of me sleeping in a bathtub because I'm a nerd, so I go on these Magic the Gathering trips with my friends, and the person that does the worst in the tournament has to sleep in the tub. It's like one of our.
You did the worst in the tournament.
Yeah, I don't know, and I. It was weird because I normally do very reasonably well for a person that doesn't have the time that get to play as much as I do. But I've been playing since I was like 8 years old.
Might be why Mike and I are kindred spirits, because I used to skip class in high school and I think I'd like stolen a key to the elevator.
Yeah.
That got from the top floor to the bottom floor that was primarily designed for handicapped students in our school. And my friend and I would like go in there and play magic cards in the elevator.
So I think, you know, yeah, I am definitely a nerd, but yeah, it's a caricature on the wall that Robin's staring at. But yeah, so
there's 8th place beside it.
Because there's 8 of us and I was 8th place. So we talked a little bit about systems and how they're not I like systems that work. I don't care about how nice they look. And so, you know, my systems for my business is the same: whiteboard, calendar, to-do list, like really simple like stuff.
You have a basic like daily task list and you fill it out the night before or the morning of and like add to it as you need to. But it's so easy to get, particularly in today's day and age where like Facebook and Instagram and 900 other things, your email, all shout at you all day long.
Yeah.
It's so easy to digitally tangent out that if you have a list in front of you and you're like, okay, I need to get this done in a period of time. Just a good old fashioned list.
Yeah, it's really helps. It's very, you know what, and it keeps things on the rails. So like, you know, for my buyers and my listings, there's 3 phases: before, during, and after. And I have lists of things to do before I get the listing or before I get the buyer, things of thing during the period of touring properties or showing properties, and then after it sells. And basically, my team uses that same list, and it's just an evolving list. Like, you're like, okay, this year, it's a big year, 2020, we're going to add this thing to the before part, or this thing to the during part. And it's like a big deal for everyone. And it's just like, these are just little improvements and minor things you can do, but you need the basics, right? Otherwise, you just have a bunch of parts lying on a table and they're not working as an engine.
Yeah, you don't want to be putting a puzzle together every day.
Exactly. That's the big thing. And I think once you kind of figure that out as a realtor and as a business person, there's you can put things on rails. There's an acceleration of your business that you can kind of go through. So when you see, like when I meet an agent, you know, without saying it in such a way, but when I meet an agent like Robin, when I first get started and he's just scattered, I'm like, okay, this is a guy, once we put some simple systems in place, is going to be a master medallion realtor, top producer at the office, has every ability to do that. And, you know, lo and behold, 6 years later, here we are. And
it's been 6 years.
2013, my friend.
Was it? It was like November 2013, right?
Yeah.
2014 was my first full year there. Yeah.
6 years.
That's right.
Shit. So it's like, I mean, through a lot, because I remember, were you dating Sandra when?
Wait. November 2013. Oh, geez, I should know these numbers.
In trouble.
Awkward.
Well, either you were just starting to date Sandra, or you just, you know, it was really like a new relationship. I think it was a new relationship.
I just started to date Sandra earlier that year.
Yeah. So, like, you know, Sandra is Robin's wife, was his girlfriend in 2013. They've gone through, like...
No, I started dating her in
2014. Yeah, so this is before. Yeah, you were single before.
It was like, immediately thereafter. Like, I think I was dating somebody else when I first...
Well, she liked, no?
No, yeah, it would have been... is that right? Ah, fuck, I can't remember. Anyways, yeah, it was very new.
One way or the other. It's crazy, hey, to think. It's like, and it's 6 years, and like, Robin's 38, I'm 37. That's like a sixth of your life. That's a pretty good run, my friend.
You think we're going to make it? We're going to go for the long haul?
I think we're going to 80. Like,
I'd like to live to be 112.
I wouldn't.
Why?
Because that's the thing.
What if you're, like, still capable?
So the... Beauty is in expiration.
Whoa.
So,
boom! Boom!
So in Lord of the Rings, there's elves, right? Elves live forever. They're immortal. And they are the most depressed. They're the most depressed
people. I'm not asking to be immortal.
Yeah. But dwarves live the shortest, but they're the most jovial. They have the most fun. And then humans are in the middle. So there's a scale. And dwarves just, like, they're hilarious, they're funny, they're just, like...
Enjoy
life, they drink beer, and they're just, like, ah, fuck it, And because they live only 30 years, you know...
I didn't know that about the dwarves.
Yeah, so that's the dwarves. They have a shorter lifespan. And then humans... If you actually... Well, pre's going into nutrition stuff, but, you know, 80 to 100 and 120 years you can live, so that's the range. And then... elves live forever. Elves are the most depressed. It's because
they live forever, though, right?
Elves are immortal. Elves are immortal.
In Lord of the Rings,
they're immortal. Unless they have like someone punctures their heart, otherwise they're immortal. They don't die from heart disease, or something like that.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah,
I should read more Tolkien.
Exactly. So that race of like. That expiry is where beauty happens, is where, like, you know, because Mona Lisa is, like, you know, it will degrade in sunlight and stuff like that. That's a part of what makes it beautiful. That's what part of what makes spring beautiful in autumn. Robin was just in my backyard looking at, I have a ginkgo tree in the backyard. And
he knows it's a ginkgo tree because I told him today.
He knows his, what are the deciduous plants? I don't know. So that's a part of, you know, that's an element of beauty.
Deciduous trees.
So, yeah, so that's an element of beauty. And so it's like,
because you know that it's green and then it turns brilliantly yellow in the fall and then that ends. The fact that there is an expiry is part of the reason.
That's why the reason. Like
a port, it's beautiful. If it was yellow all year round, you wouldn't say it's amazing when it's yellow.
Yeah.
You say it's amazing when it's yellow because it's only yellow for a couple of weeks before
exactly.
the leaves fall off.
That's exactly the reason. That's, you know, the you know, it's you know, it is a bit philosophical, but you know, I think in all things there are lessons, and you know, once you kind of another one. What do you gotta do? Yeah,
I got
this is my last appointment, so this is not even an appointment. This is just fun. We finished a half one of these things. Yeah, not even a half. It was like it was only like a quarter. Yeah, it was like this. Anyways,
well, still, I think it's like 90% alcohol or 90 proof. I think it's 45%
alcohol.
No,
it's 40 proof. 45.
Yeah,
I didn't know that. Yeah.
90 proof. Yeah.
Hey, I didn't. I actually someone bought. Most of my alcohol, people just buy it for me, so. So, yeah, it's just, you know, it's something that, you know, that's some definition of it. But, you know, we were talking a little bit about business and mistakes and things like that. So how about some common mistakes that you made?
Well, I think that we kind of covered a lot of the mistakes. I feel like...
Okay.
I mean, I think, what were the other things? We were going to say, like, the main three things that are important to do. I think that... Mistakes and important things to do kind of
blend
hand in hand.
Yeah, okay.
But one of the most important things, which is also one of my biggest mistakes early on in my career, are build systems and be consistent with them. If you are going to try to farm an area, and by farm an area, I mean focus on generating business within that area, then... find a bunch of different ways. You can't just choose one way to focus on that area. Pick a bunch of different ways. You know, if it is mail outs or mail walks or...
doing opens in the area.
Doing open houses in the area, picking them up from other clients, or picking up from other agents, I should say. If it's door knocking in the area, every single different potential contact you can make with people in that area builds your brand and your recognition in that area better. But, you know, don't do that and then do it for 3 months. 3 months doesn't mean anything in the life of real estate. When somebody buys a condo, as Mike and I said earlier, they tend to own it for 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, that's sort of the medium. But somebody that you... run into now and then for 3 months, you do not remember in a 3 to 5 year period.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody that you run into every 3 months for 3 to 5 years, you remember.
Okay, he just dropped some pretty like sick, like crazy knowledge for agents as they kind of move through their business. Is those past clients that you have, if you keep up to date with them, and Robin's really, you know, quite good at repeat and referral business.
Getting better.
But a lot of the people come back.
Well, I mean, a huge portion, more than 50% of my business is from repeat customers and referrals now. And it doesn't even take that much work to get it there.
Yeah.
I'm living proof of that because I could certainly be better at my contact with past clients. Past clients are the best source of new business.
Right.
They know you. They like you. I mean, except for the ones that don't. But they know you. They like you. And like, if you meet somebody at an open house, you have to generate a completely new relationship.
Right.
If you've sold a house to somebody and they loved you through the whole process, who's an easier person to get business from?
It's funny, like, you know, I think there's this fear of going back, like, oh, they're going to think I want something from them. Whenever I call an old client or whenever I ask an agent to call an old client, this is the conversation normally. It's like, bring. And as soon
ring,
as...
Ring?
Like ring.
I feel like ring.
Ring.
bring it on.
It's like ring, and it's like, and like, you don't even have to say hello. They're like, Robin, like, where have you been? What is going on in life? And you're just like, whoa, like, you know, that's just my experience so far. Like, that has been.
Once you're on the phone with them a lot of the time, you don't have to say a thing. Like, they'll just be like, oh, you know what? Actually, one of my neighbors was just talking about something. You should call them. They'll do it. XXX X Street, and you're just like, holy shit, that was easy.
Yeah, and I think because especially when you build a great rapport with them, they like you, they've used you before, it has, there's something called confirmation bias. Like when you're doing something, you're like, you tell other people that you're doing it because, you know, and it's like, okay, this is like to confirm your own decisions, like, you know, in a sense. So it's a business and psychological term. So it's something to kind of consider as you kind of navigate through the business. And, you know, I think we all could do it better. And like putting those into systems and stuff like that as well within your business. I've recently been talking to a lot of agents. I don't know if you guys do this. This is might be a little bit of a hot tip for a lot of realtors. Before property tax season,
to do a call. Call people and
remind them of the due date.
Remind them of the due date. Or when property assessments come out, even better, is call people, ask them how they feel about their assessment. Ask them if they'd like an actual market evaluation, because market evaluations tend to differ significantly from property assessments.
Right. Yeah.
Or
plus or minus. Yeah.
Ask them. Yeah. Plus or minus totally depends on the market. Or even ask them if they think that their property assessment is disagreeably too high, and ask if they'd like help to defend a lower property assessment so they can save money on taxes. Saving money on taxes is not big money. You adjust somebody's value of their home by $100,000 and adjust their taxes by not a lot. But you'd be surprised how many people will respond positively to that, whether or not they care about it. Whether they might be like, oh, I don't need to save $100 on my taxes. But you know what? I actually would like an assessment of my property. And then maybe they're like, wow, you know what? I think I'm going to sell this investment property or something like that.
Yeah. And I think that there, you know, those touch points and the reinforcement of, hey, we're in a, even though we're not actively working together, we're still in a client relationship. Like we're still.
And these are good ideas for reasons to get in touch with people, but you can find your own. The main point is just get in touch with people.
Yeah.
If you keep a spreadsheet, an ugly spreadsheet that you print out and put on your wall of your list of clients.
This is the longest pod in history.
We're gonna stop at an hour.
Yeah, we're gonna do another 2 minutes, and then we're gonna stop at
1 hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So yeah, even if you print out this ugly list of people and put it on your wall, it's just a matter of coming up with a reason to talk to them, because people want to know that they matter.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just call them and say hi. If you call them and say happy birthday, if you send them something that says happy new year or happy Chinese new year, if you call them and say, do you want help with your taxes or do you want a new property evaluation? Happy Easter, happy Hanukkah. It doesn't matter. Just find a reason to talk to your clients a few times a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so maybe on that note, what we'll do, you know, this is the longest pod ever, and it was so fun to hang out with Robin.
This is a good cash pod.
This is a very good cash pod.
Happy my good pod. Introduction.
Good introduction for the pod.
Popping my pod cherry.
Exactly. So, Robin, what is the best, just in case we have some listeners that were interested in hiring Robin to
and
sell their
made
house.
It and, through 1 hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah, I made it through that one. You know, you'd be surprised. People like... There's some podcasts, like Joe Rogan's podcast is like 3.5 hours.
Holy
per
shit.
Pod.
I've been meaning to listen to some. My assistant loves Joe Rogan's podcast.
Yeah, they're like 3.5 hours. They go super deep. I could, you know, if I was Joe Rogan, I'm not Joe Rogan, but I could do a five. I could do 4 or 5 hours. I could do like 4 or 5 hour pod with Robin. But yeah, if someone wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way, Rob?
If somebody wants to what?
We get in touch with you. It's the sponsorship side. Not the sponsorship side, but the side that, like, you know, just in case there's a buyer or seller out there that's listening that wants to hire Robin.
The best way to get in touch with me, honestly, I respond to pretty much all forms. If you want to get in touch with me, you can call me. If you Google my name, I'm like the first 13 results. Okay, so you can call me, you can text me, you can email me. If you put it in writing, that's the best. Even if I'm not... able to answer my phone at the time, then it's very easy for me to get back to you.
Perfect.
My email address is my name. It's robin at robinbarden.com. It's an easy one to remember.
robin@robinbarden.com.
And you know, honestly, anybody can get in touch with me for any reason. If you just have questions about real estate, even if you have no interest in working with me. I'm always happy to chat with people. I'm a social person, and and you can take advantage of that.
Okay, we want to take advantage of Robin, and we have been taking advantage of Robin through today. And you know what? And thank you guys so much for listening to the Michael Yu podcast. If you've enjoyed this podcast with Robin, please like it and rate it 5 stars, and also subscribe to the channel. That'd be great. Until next time, thank you so much, Robin. I'm sure we're going to continue to do this, but yeah, well, thank you guys
so much. It's been a real pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for listening, guys.